Fear God and keep His commandments. Ecclesiastes 12, this is the conclusion that is reached by the preacher at the end of all of his study and all of his trial and error and all of the things throughout the book that he found were worthless and meaningless and vain and striving after the wind and all of these things. But when he finally came to the conclusion, he discovered that the only thing that was truly worthwhile, the only thing that really mattered in life, was fearing God and keeping His commandments. And when we actually get to the end of life, that will be all that will have mattered. It will not have mattered how much money we've made, how much money we've spent, how many things we've possessed, how many people we've known, or how popular we've been. None of those things are going to matter. The final judgment, the only question that God's going to be concerned with is, did we respect Him and His Word? Did we obey Him? That's all He's going to ask about. He won't care if we know all, if we knew five of the presidents of the United States personally. He won't care if we met kings and queens. It doesn't matter to Him. He set them up and brought them down. So what if we knew them? It didn't mean anything to Him. So Ecclesiastes 12, beginning in verse 11, the words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. And further by these, my son, be admonished. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. That's it. That is our whole job. And then he goes on in verse 14 to say, for God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. It doesn't even matter if you hide things all your life. In the end, God's going to reveal it. Every secret thing is going to be brought into judgment. If you did things good in secret, God knows and He'll reward you for that in judgment. If you did things bad in secret, God knows and He'll reveal that and punish you in judgment. Both the Old and New Testament tell us that we're going to have to answer to God for the way we live our lives here. Here in Ecclesiastes 12:14, as well then as in 2 Corinthians 5, verses 9 and 10. In verse 10 he says, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. We will receive a reward, either a good reward or a very unpleasant reward. But we will get our just deserts one way or another. You know, Ecclesiastes deals with the vanity of life on this earth. And it concludes with what's really important, and that is fearing God and being obedient to Him. Throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, there are several occasions where this idea keeps coming up of fearing God. Ecclesiastes 3, 14 and 15. So I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it. Nothing can be taken away from it. God does it that men should fear before Him. God allows things to happen. And God causes other things to happen. So that we will learn to fear Him. Learn to respect Him. Ecclesiastes 5 and verses 1 through 7. It says, walk prudently when you go to the house of God. Draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you are on earth. Therefore let your words be few. For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for He has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there also is vanity, but fear God. So again and again, also in Ecclesiastes 7:13 through 18, talks about the wicked suffer and all of the problems that come from it. He says in verse 18, for he who fears God will escape them all. All of the problems that come from wickedness, but God's the one we need to really fear. Ecclesiastes 8:10 through 13, you see, it says it again. He explains, though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged, yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before Him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. And then Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14 that we read a moment ago again, he says, fear God. Now, does that mean we're afraid like Adam and Eve were in the garden? I heard your voice and I was afraid, so I hid myself. Well, some people would have us have that kind of fear of God. They would have us picture God as an angry God who's got lightning bolts in his hands and he's just waiting for us to mess up so he can strike us down. But that's not our God, and that's not what the Bible means when it speaks of having a fear of God. It simply refers to us having a respect for God. I have to say, I have a fear of electricity. Electricity can kill you. Lightning, or even the electricity that's running these lights, it can kill you. And I'm afraid of it from that standpoint. But I'm not so afraid of it that I don't have electricity in my house. Some folks might be so afraid of it, they'd be afraid to have electricity in their house. Huh? Afraid, you know, that it might jump out of the walls and get them, something like that. But I understand that as long as it's in that wire and as long as it's going in those light bulbs like it's supposed to and doing what it's supposed to do, it's a good thing. It's only if I do something ridiculous, like I did back here when we were working on one of the rooms and decide to strip one of the wires without the power being off. That's when you get in trouble with electricity. When you try to think you're smarter than it is and that you can do something that you can't do. So we've got to watch out for that. We need to avoid that. And that's what it talks about with God. As long as we're being obedient to God, we have a respect for Him. We know. The New Testament tells us, don't fear man. What can man do you? All he can do is kill you. So fear Him who has power to cast both body and soul in hell. That's why we fear God. But based on that fear, we know if we're doing what's right, we don't have to be afraid. If we're right with Him, if we're following His instructions, then there's nothing to fear. It's just like with the electricity. If you follow the instructions, if you do the things that you're supposed to do with electricity, there's nothing to fear. It's only when you start getting in there messing around with those wires when they're live that gets you in trouble. And the same thing with God. So we don't have a fear of Him that we run and hide, but instead our fear of Him is a respect. We understand that He is powerful, and we understand what He can do to us if we're disobedient to Him, and because of that, we want to be obedient to Him. And of course, the second part of that, keep His commandments, goes hand in hand with it. Many times, the people who are truly afraid of God are the ones who have reason to be afraid of Him. They're not keeping His commandments. They know what they ought to be doing, and they know they're not doing it. And so they really are afraid. That was Adam and Eve's case. They were afraid because they knew they had done what they weren't supposed to do. If they had kept His commandments, they wouldn't have been hiding in the bushes. They would have been glad to hear the Father's voice walking in the garden in the evening. Ecclesiastes 3, 10 through 12. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. And then in chapter 3, verses 14 and 7, through 17 as well, he talks about there that men should fear before him. We read that a while ago. But he says then also in verse 17, I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. But God shall judge the righteous and the wicked. We need to understand that. God requires an account of all that is past, verse 15 tells us. Ecclesiastes 5, 1 through 6 also, he tells us that we need to obey God. We need to keep the promises that we make, the vows that we make to Him. And Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verses 25 through 29 as well. So all through, even though he's talking about the meaningless of life here on earth, all through he keeps coming back to this idea, hey, you know what? Yeah, everything about life on earth is meaningless. But you know what? You need to keep fearing God. You need to keep keeping His commandments. And then when he gets to the conclusion, of course, that is the thing that's really worthwhile. Because that's the only thing that we get to carry with us into eternity. In Ecclesiastes 11, 9 through 12, 1 says, Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. Know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Therefore remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. For childhood and youth are vanity. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. You know, there comes a point in time where you just don't enjoy living as much as you used to. Every day becomes more of a struggle. It's not just fun and games. It's not just easy. Paul was told, when you were young, you went where you wanted. Peter was told by Jesus, when you were young, you went where you wanted to go. You did what you wanted to do. But when you're old, you'll be led by the hand, and you'll have to go where others lead you. You won't get to go where you want to go. Won't get to do what you want to do. And I see that sometimes, like today, we went to the nursing home, and a lot of the folks there at the nursing home really were glad to see the young people. But I could tell there was a few that really wished they weren't there. They would have rather been, you know, they didn't care to be there. There weren't many. Most of them were so glad to see the young people come in and sing and read Scripture and just to see young people. But, you know, but you go where somebody takes you when you get to a certain point in life. And you don't have a choice about it anymore. And so it is that we need to remember God while we're young. This is the whole duty of man. That's it. Those two things sum up everything that the Bible teaches us. Now, of course, there are a lot of details underneath those two headings of fear God and keep His commandments. There are plenty of commandments in there for us to keep. But we need to understand how important it is to do that and to do it fully and completely. I have two ideas regarding that I'd like to share. You know, Satan is always trying to find ways to get people. That's his whole goal of existence. And so he called for a convention of all the demons to come and see what they could come up with. And he explained to them, you know, we can't keep all the Christians from going to church. And we can't keep them from reading their Bibles or even from some of them from learning the truth that's in there. And we can't keep them away from having morals and having values. He said, we've got to do something. to stop them. And so what can we do? And so the devil threw this idea around and that idea around. They're trying to figure out what they could do to overcome the Christians. And finally, there were two ideas that came forward that they all said, hey, those are good. The first idea was that we'll actually convince them that they should go to church, and they should pray, and they should read their Bibles, and they should do all these, and on and on. We'll tell them they should do those things. And at first, they said, well, wait, what is it? That doesn't make sense. We're trying to get them to not do those things. And they'll say, wait, you haven't heard the rest of my plan. He said, we'll get them to think that they should do all those things, but we'll just convince them that they should do it tomorrow. And we'll just get them to put it off till tomorrow. And just don't worry about it today. And then, of course, once that pattern sets in, the procrastination of putting it off till tomorrow. And so that he said, well, that's really good. Yeah, well, here was another idea then that came up. He said, well, let's do this. What we'll do is we'll keep them from really forming a close relationship with God by just keeping them involved in so many things that we steal away their time so that they can't really give their time to Jesus. And we'll give them all sorts of things to distract them and all sorts of things to keep them occupied. And I think what we'll do is we'll keep them busy with all sorts of non-essentials in life. We'll come up with all sorts of things to occupy their minds. We'll tempt them to spin, so they have to work lots and lots of extra hours to pay the bills. And we'll convince them that, you know, if they don't work all these hours, they'll lose all that stuff. And so they'll work 10 or 12 hours a day instead of 7 or 8. And when they do that, then they won't spend time with their families, and their families will fall apart, and that'll be a victory for us. And we'll do more. We'll give them radios and CD players and DVD players and TVs and VCRs, and we'll keep them watching and listening and paying attention to so many things that they don't have time to listen to hear God's words in their life. We'll fill up their coffee tables and their magazine racks with magazines and newspapers. And we'll give them news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we'll just constantly tell them about all the bad things in the world so that they think about all the negative things and keep their mind from thinking of the positive things of Christ. And even then in their recreation, we'll get them to just think that they haven't really had any recreation unless they've just gone all out. And so we'll have them traveling all over the place, and so they'll be so tired after their vacation that they need to take another vacation. And we'll just keep them busy. And even when it comes to church activities, we'll get them involved in all sorts of extra church activities that don't really get them focused on what God really wants them to do. We'll get them to be doing all kinds of things that they think are good works. And we'll have them convinced that they're really doing good things. And by that, we'll keep them from sharing Christ with others and keep them from becoming close to Him themselves. Well, it was quite a convention in the end, and the angels were excited about their assignment. Their job was to get Christians busy. Keep them so busy that they didn't have time for God. And what do you think? Has the devil's scheme been successful? He had a plan, didn't he? You know, 50 years ago, the pace of life was much slower than it is today. Here we are. We have washing machines to help us wash our clothes. A lot of dishwashers to wash the dishes for you. Refrigerators that keep your things cold for you. ovens that cook them faster. You don't have to start fires and keep a fire going all the time. That microwave oven so you can cook something in 5 minutes instead of an hour and a half. We have cars so that we can go in an hour the distance it used to take to go in 2 days. All these things that should make our life easier and allow us to have more time. And we've got less time than folks had 50 or 100 years ago. And that's something. All these time-saving devices. And yet it seems like they haven't really saved us any time, have they? They just make us rush around faster to do more. Because we have to keep busy. Well, how about this definition of busy? Beating under Satan's yoke. Sometimes that's what we are when we're busy. We're just under Satan's control. We're under his power. Satan's goal is to take our hearts and minds off of Christ. And he doesn't do it just all at once. He does it gradually by getting in there and keeping us so busy with worldly things that we don't have time for Christ. But the writer of Ecclesiastes said, this is the conclusion of the whole matter. Not keep busy all the time. I saw a joke, comic somewhere, that there was a priest or a preacher was there, and one of the members said, I saw the signs of the end of the time. Jesus is coming back. We think Jesus is coming back. And so the preacher said, okay, everybody look busy. Well, that won't get it. Just looking busy isn't going to accomplish anything. God knows the difference in whether we're just looking busy or whether we're actually being obedient to Him. We must fear God and keep His commandments. But it's not, again, the kind of fear that makes us scared. Not that kind of afraid. 1 John 4, verses 17 and 18 says, love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Realize that if we have love perfected in us, then we don't have to be afraid in the day of judgment. We can be bold in the day of judgment because as He is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear because fear involves torment. He who fears has not been made perfect in love. John tells us that we should reach the point in our Christian walk that we're not afraid of God. We're not afraid of hell. That it's not the fear of fires that drives us and that motivates us, but instead that it's God's love and our love for Him that motivates us. Fear can be quite a motivator. There's no doubt about it. People do a lot of things because they're afraid. But love is a much more powerful motivator than fear. People will do things for love even though they're afraid to do it. People will sacrifice themselves for someone else because of love. People will risk their lives to save someone because of love. They wouldn't do that for fear. Why, for fear they'd run around, turn around and run themselves to save their own skin. But love is more powerful. We need to fear God, respect Him, understand that if we do disobey Him, He can and will throw us into hell for eternity. He must if He's a just God. But He surely doesn't want to do that. He wants us to come to repentance. He wants us to come to Him. And He wants us to keep His commandments. And His commandments are not grievous. It's not as though He's telling us things that are oh so hard. Well, they may seem hard to us at times, but He has good reason behind them. He wants us to have a better life. He wants us to enjoy the things that He has prepared for us. And as we saw this morning, the Father's commandment is life everlasting. Don't you want to have that? We've got to keep His commandments in order to take part in that. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to His invitation, perhaps you haven't been keeping His commandments. Perhaps you've been thinking that you could do whatever you wanted to do and it'd be okay. Maybe you've just allowed Satan to distract you and keep you so busy with other things that you haven't had time to keep God's commandments. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation for any reason, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.